There we go, and we are live. All right, let's run this. We got two hosts in one room right now, so we're kind of like, how do we do this?
Well, Lauren, she asked the first question. That's as simple as it. You know, ladies first.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Age before beauty.
I don't know how to take that. Am I not beautiful?
Are we not handsome?
Oh. okay, anyways, what is a favorite rabbit hole that you've been down?
Oh, I can give you my least favorite. It's the one that your dad brought onto my radar. It's called geoengineering. That is the absolute worst rabbit hole ever. my favorite one, that's a great question, and I think it's tied between Bitcoin and carnivore. And the reason why those two are my favorites is because they are very uplifting and positive and things that you can control yourself, which is, you know, why I talk about geoengineering is a tough one, because it's difficult for the individual to control this as they learn more about it. You learn more about how so much of this is just like outside of our control, and yet we have to bear the consequences. The thing about Bitcoin and carnivore diet is that you have complete control over the money that you save in and the money that you use and you transact and you participate in with the economy. And for the carnivore diet, you have complete control over what you put in your body. So I think that that's why those two are my favorites, because there's very actionable things that you can do immediately to use these things and improve your life. And so I think that would be my answer. I love both of those.
Yeah, I would say the geoengineering is quite a dark rabbit hole.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
I'm sure we'll be talking about that today. It's.
But when you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Like, literally. You know, it's like when you say, if you said that about the education system, you know, all right, yeah, when you see it, you can't unsee it. But, you know, there's a lot of nuance to that, and you're probably not even in the education system anymore. Well, you certainly aren't either. But when you see it, you can't unsee it. And those lines in the sky and all of that chemical haze that just hangs around all of, like, it's just so, it is so obvious. And I can't believe I was so blind to it, willfully blind, I would say, for so many years.
It's scary, though, because there must be a lot more information that we're still blind to.
Yeah.
That's the scary part.
Like, it really makes you think, like, what else have I been a total idiot on for my entire life?
Yeah.
I've done photography for a long time, and I literally have pictures back in my library of me just taking pictures of the lines, just thinking they're so artsy and fun. You know, I'm always about, you know, getting the symmetry and the lines together. So I would literally take pictures of them around buildings and things, thinking this is such a cool, like, aspect of my picture. And the brain just doesn't think any further than that. Like, when you're in that NPC mindset, like I was for so many years, you're just sort of looking at things at the very surface layer, and it's truly just the definition of mind-blowing once you dig just a layer past that and realize that you have no idea what's really going on. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Oh god. Yeah,
so many. Oh
yeah, who knows what else at this stage. The whole tech thing, you know, talking to the daylight guys, right? And when they and Jack Cruz, and how Jack Cruz tells you about how the blue light is intentionally made to flicker at a certain amount of X amount of times per, you know, whatever the hertz and frequency of that is, gets into your brain, goes through your eyes and into your brain and through your whole central nervous system to make you behave in certain ways. You're like, what? Like, that wasn't a coincidence that, you know, that was, and you speak to Anjan and Tristan, you're like, hang on. So you guys, you've made this whole device here, and this is you could revolutionize a whole industry. Why are the Apple guys not building this?
Yeah.
No, they're not going to.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, actually. I was just talking to my dad about this earlier, because, you know, I'm always trying to sneak little things in with my boomer parents, because, you know, I just saw him, like, on his phone a few nights ago. I'm at home visiting for Christmas right now, and it's just like blasting blue light, just lighting his whole face up like you can see at nighttime. And I sort of just sneak that in, like, oh, Dad, I talked to this Tristan Scott guy recently. He works at this place called Daylight Computer. It's super cool. It's like this really red light. It gets rid of that blue light. And one of the questions he asked was, like, you know, how can you make a business off of that when Apple could just change it tomorrow? And, you know, then that business would be gone, right? And my response is really just, well, they haven't. So we need to have entrepreneurs coming in and doing this stuff and taking some risks. And I'm sure that they know that if these companies were to decide to do that, that would be bad for their business. But they're going out there doing it anyway, which is amazing and respectable. I love that.
Yeah, it's I've got one coming. I'm looking forward.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I played with one in Nashville when I was at the meetup before the conference this year. I met Tristan there, and he was walking around showing people one. So I played with it. It's amazing. Have you given it a try yet?
No, it's in the post.
It's 100% worth it. I'm jealous already. It's super cool. Super cool.
Yeah, they're great guys. Well, the Bitcoiners too, which is even better. Bitcoiners making healthy tech. And
yes,
yeah, it'd be interesting to see where they are in 4 or 5 years' time.
And yeah, what products for sure.
And what copycats are out there. Who have they inspired to come into this field? It's going to be a huge field, right? Healthy tech. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't it be? Oh, we've got our red light here, Lauren. We don't have a red light on.
Hey, I just realized in like 5 years, I'll be 17.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
What, you want to say 13 your whole life?
You're getting old.
I'm getting old.
Yeah, I just my light above me right here in my house. So speaking of like the things I've been like slowly slipping in with my family, there's just like this nasty, just blue LED light in this room before. And I convinced them to switch it out with an incandescent. So we're getting little wins everywhere. Boys and girls,
nice. This is important. Yeah, we're on the Block Blue Light website. I've ordered a bunch of bulbs from them, and I'm putting different, but you know, lamps. So the lamps you have in your bedroom, they're special lights. They are that there's no blue light being pumped out. If you these ceiling lights are different. They're a pain in the bum. we're like 3 months here, so slowly changing.
Oh, is it a new house?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, of course, they were all like super bright LED. Oh, I'm like, damn it.
Yeah, we only turned on like two parts of the lights. We were like, oh, it's too bright. So we had to turn off one already.
It's like crazy. It's another one of those things that once you see it, you cannot see it, is when you just realize and start using the more red light. Like even on my computer screen right now, I have this app called Flux, which just like Flux. Completely That's reds it out. Was,
yeah, so Flux. You just go to flux.com, download the app.
It's F.LUX. I think if you just type that in, it comes up. And yeah, it's perfect. And I have Twilight on my Android phone, which is the same thing. Basically just this red filter that you can sort of slide the slider from yellow to red. And I always try to have it as red as possible. Mm. And one of the things I wasn't completely sure about was, is there still flickering on these screens because they're not designed in that way? I've used slow motion cameras and like taken videos of it, and I don't see any flickering. Like I do a lot of times when I take like, you know, videos of like the TV screen. So I think that it's okay. Like, I know there's a few aspects to that. Like daylight is, you know, designed with that in mind. So that's going to be the best you can get, but everyone can do something at least. I can certainly feel the difference on my eyes. You know, when I compare this to when I was younger and would just stay up all night playing Call of Duty till 3 a.m, I remember my eyes would be burning from the TV screen. And I never get that anymore. And I think it really is because I'm using these blue light filters on the screens.
Right. So I've gone to justgetflux.com.
Yep. Sounds right.
Yeah. Download F.Lux, free for Mac OS. Is it free or did you get a paid version?
It's free.
Damn.
I just use a free version.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dare I try and do this whilst we're on this call? Oh, looks like we're daring, Lauren. Looks like we're doing it. Okay.
Yeah, do it.
That is...
Everyone listening, go to your app store on your phone. I'm not even sure if iPhone allows this because I know that they're more like strict about sort of apps that sort of have an overlay component. But if you're on Android, the one I have is Twilight. It's great. So like, this is something everyone listening should do this. And check this off their list if they haven't yet.
Flux would like to use your current location. You don't need that. Don't allow. Okay. The sun is up. Recommended colors, daytime. So sunset. Oh, look at that. It switches straight away. Bedtime.
Yep.
So
if I always click bedtime and just start from there, and then you have complete control over how red or how dark.
Whoa.
It is. So it's a little bit clunky. Yeah. There's like an up and down arrow. You drag or you hold down on the arrow until it goes into the lowest part of that little graph it shows. And then you can just move the slider as low or high as you want to.
The sun is up. Okay. Yeah. So if I move
it, tries a little too hard to like follow the sun stuff personally, but so I just always manually do it.
Okay. Well, I've got it now all the way to the left. And it's a lot easier on your eyes.
It's better already, right?
No, but like my eyes felt something when
I clicked it back on.
Yeah.
That's what it's doing to you.
I don't know. Like my eyes, they feel heavier when I see it this. And when you turn it onto the blue light, they feel lighter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's mimicking sunlight. That's why we have one set of blue blocker glasses, don't we, for the television and when Samuel's gaming, because he would play his Xbox.
He doesn't really use it, though.
Well, he should.
Well, I do. I do more than him, actually.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's changing. I got a set coming from my one of my Christmas gifts.
Oh, really?
I asked Santa for one as well. Also, that was on the top of my Christmas list, so I'm looking forward to those.
Yeah. I got a pair of aviators. I'm going to look cool AF, girlfriend. It's going to...
I'm going to... Oh, there was this... I just remembered something from a movie, but I forgot the quote.
Which movie?
It was... I don't know. It's like...
This is a great story
I know. It was going to be really funny, but then I forgot. It was going to be really funny.
All right. Well, you can always come back.
Yeah, I am always.
Okay. But did you have any other questions for Ben?
I don't think so. I don't think I have any more questions.
Well, I love your question. Your questions are getting better with experience. I love this. Because I've listened to all of your father's episodes, and I it's so cool to watch you grow along with him. And I think that's such a great dynamic that I don't know any other podcast that do that. It's super cool. So we love you, Lauren. You're the best. You're doing great. And you're in a great situation. You should be very proud of yourself and your family for being part of this awesome Bitcoin ride.
Thank you. Thank you for all that.
Yeah. You're part of it. You are part of it.
Part of history.
Yeah. You say that. So when you're 17, you will look back and think deeply about when you were 9 and you started asking questions.
And see how cringe I was, but...
Yeah.
How we all were years ago. You know, we were all cringe before Bitcoin. This is like the rule. Bitcoin removes the cringe. It's the anti-cringe technology.
Exactly. Just one day at a time, one little bit less cringe. But so Mummy saw earlier, I put out a tweet today. I'm using Opus to make little clips and put the videos out. And I found an old interview I did with Michael Saylor back in November 2020. It was the first time he came on. And we talked a lot about the education system at the beginning, 45 minutes. He was talking about Saylor Academy, and he was blowing my mind because nobody had really ever heard him talk about that. Nobody even knew, well, come on, no one knew MicroStrategy existed. No one knew Saylor existed. And all of the podcasts at that point had been about, you know, the corporate strategy and blah, blah, blah. But I wanted to ask him about Saylor Academy. And for 45 minutes, he just absolutely, you know, nailed the problems with the education system. Mm-hmm. So I was making little clips of that. Then I found another little clip of him talking about Bitcoin being an aqueduct, Bitcoin being, you know, classic Saylor analogies, like 2020 style analogies when everything was still firing for him. And he hadn't been beaten into submission by CNBC and all these other mainstream media people that he's been trying to explain it to. But Mummy saw the clip. And she said, "But are you sitting in the bathroom interviewing him?"
Oh, yeah.
We are all plebs. We are all plebs. My studio was a laptop, a basic plug-in mic, and it was in my daughter's bathroom because that was the only place that
was quiet.
She's like, "You interviewed Michael Saylor." I'm like, "Yeah, not just him, everybody else too."
I remember that. I remember
because you would come up.
Yeah.
So the computer would be sat in between two sinks, And I would be sat in front of the bath, but I had to angle the laptop up so people couldn't see the bath behind me. It looks like an attic, right? When you go back and look at the old.
And then we moved down to, again, my older sister's bedroom.
Yep, that's right. That. Once we got the desk in.
Yeah.
We had to
get it through a window. We had to get the desk through the window.
And here too.
Oh, yeah, and that window, yeah.
It's pleb life, Lauren. That's all it is. All
right, podcasting is an art form. You know, I've been traveling around the last couple, well, more than a couple, a few years since I've been doing a podcast. And I went through Colombia, through Mexico, just bouncing around a bunch of different hostels along the way. And finding, first of all, just good Wi-Fi and also places to record where there's a little bit of privacy is challenging. So I still need to make a collage of, I think I'm going to break the record for most backgrounds of podcast recordings ever in the first 100 episodes. I still need to confirm that.
I'm sure you would. Right, Lauren, if you're done.
Yes, I think I'm okay.
Thank you so much for coming by, Lauren. It was awesome to meet you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for saying all those kind things. And
of course. Yeah, well, keep up the great work.
Have a good day or night, or I don't know what it is anymore.
It's morning here. It's 9 a.m. for me. I'm just getting started. Okay. Yeah.
Have a good morning. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you later. What time is it for you guys right now? Is it nighttime? It's usually
5 p.m. It feels like midnight, though, because
it was 1 a.m.
We're in the UK and the sun has gone down like an hour and a half ago.
No sun for you in the UK. I just see, you know, I mean, I feel like the UK, just bringing it back to the geoengineering thing. I'm sure you're aware of that concerned citizen account on Twitter. So he is in the UK and he's always taking his own pictures and sharing other people's videos. And I feel like that is almost in some ways even more of an epicenter to this conversation than the US, because it is just so clearly happening. And, you know, people are, I think, waking up at a faster rate because they're really cranking up the gas on it more. But at the same time, you know, people are losing their minds even more because they're saying, how the fuck are people around me not seeing this?
Yeah.
And so you get a lot of really fiery videos of people just saying, like, how are people not seeing this right now? And you literally have like this permanent mono cloud that's just stuck over you forever. No sun at all. Is that pretty much what you've seen?
Oh, God. Yeah. And it was happening in France, too, which is the incredible thing, because it's supposed to be sunny in the southwest of France, guys. You know, come on. How is nobody realizing what's going on? And then you wake up and the sky is blue, and all of a sudden you look up and it's just this grid pattern, like that you think that's natural air traffic. That can't be. And the other day I was in France, I took a picture because it was just unbelievable. You had the grid pattern and then one great big circle. Well, what's that dude doing? Like, you know, and people are going, oh, he's probably just, you know, circling around to land at the airport. You're like, okay, but then you also tell me that it's because of the altitude and it's colder up there. That's why they make the lines. But if he's circling around, then that would be a low. Like, and it's a hot day. Like, no. No, it's just normal, dude. Always been there. So to back people up, I had a couple of friends, Bitcoiners, in my ear about it. I don't know, 18 months ago, I suppose. And I had all of the basic, like, no, bros, it's just condensation. It's unspent fuel. It's whatever I've been told to think it was, right? And they're like, no, there's something else. Can't tell you what it is, but ain't right. And if you want to cast your memory back to when you were a kid, when sure as shit, there were airplanes in the sky, but there's the other one, right? Oh yeah, there's way more air traffic than there used to be. But do you put yourself in your 12-year-old body when you're laying in the garden and you're looking up at the sky, what do you see? On a nice blue sunny day, great big fluffy beautiful clouds and that plane with a tiny little streak of line behind. Yeah, sure, I remember it. I do remember it, but nothing like what we see today. Like these lines that just hang for 8 to 10 hours and slowly spread and then just get laid down at certain times of the day. That's another thing you find weird. So some sunny days, it's fine. And you can see the planes and the tiny little lines, or no lines at all. And that's where people get confused. They think, it must just be different atmospheric pressure or temperature up there and blah, blah, blah. But then the next day, like everywhere, gridded patterns which just slowly spread. And when I started looking, it took me like 6 months, and I was just making a mental note. And then I started going down the same rabbit holes that you ended up going down. I didn't find Franken skies. You did a great podcast on that. And then I had the moral dilemma of an ego dilemma. Do I start tweeting about this?
Yep.
Or am I going to ruin my reputation, in air quotes? And then I realized, what the fuck? Like, you know, you're self-censoring because you think your reputation matters. Like, it doesn't. Like, you know, you're as a Bitcoiner, you should have gone through an ego death by now. And exactly. The truth is way more important than any freaking number of followers you have on any particular social platform that you think you've put work and effort into to build all of this bullshit. You're like, no, you know what? I'm putting it out there. I'm saying there's something up. I don't know what it is. I can't prove to you what's in these things, but I can tell you what my eyes see and what my gut feel is. And then if you follow the money, there's a huge business at the moment in sustainable aviation fuel, which is being inspired by fiat misaligned incentives. So is it linked to that in some way? And these airlines, these subsidized airlines, they're flying with this stuff. Could that perhaps be it? I don't know. It's a theory. Then, of course, you have the conspiracy within the conspiracy, which is the absolute perfect psyop play, is that, make them all look stupid and think that, you know, we're spraying poisonous chemicals, which is going to kill everybody and turn them into zombies. And there's going to be a zombie movie at the end of it. And it's all Satan's work. Just to discredit anybody that should ever point up at the sky and say, it looks weird.
Yeah, this has to be the absolute crown jewel of the PSYOP machine, where anytime you ever think of the word chemtrails, it is something that you laugh at. You laugh at these people. You're supposed to criticize them. It's like the crazy uncle in the movie, in the comedy movie, that's talking about chemtrails. You know, it's constantly, you know, just painted in this light. It's like, if you say that, you're insane, period. Like, and I started from that place too, as I'm sure you did. It's very, very well indoctrinated into the population. This is how you know they've done a good job. I can't even remember, you know, what the specific examples were where that was sprinkled in. You know, I just kind of remember generally, like, oh, of course, you know, that's crazy, but I don't know why. And that's when you know they've done an extremely thorough job just making that part of the fabric, the social fabric, is that, you know, you don't ask questions about the science. You don't ask questions about this and that. And, you know, chemtrails are a crazy conspiracy theory. Don't you laugh at those people. And, mm-hmm. you know, for me, you mentioned a couple of things there. You know, I've talked a couple times on here how I first started realizing it. And I was in Nashville at the time, actually, for the conference, for the Bitcoin conference earlier this year. And I came a month early because I wanted to check off the 4th of July in Nashville off my bucket list, because it's like super well known for that. And so I was in this Airbnb up in the suburbs, and there was this grass hill close by that I would walk over to every day and try to get as much sun as I could. I'd try to go lay out in the sun in the mornings and go there again for sunset. And I would, you know, at this point I was far enough down the health rabbit hole that I knew that the sun is our friend. It's beautiful. It's warm. It's good for your skin. You want to get as much of it as you can. So I was starting to really pay attention to the sun and like watch it and look at it. And that's when you tell that it sure seems like these planes that keep flying over it, like it's just covering the sun up with this haze. That's weird. And I was getting pissed off because like I want to sunbathe. Like, come on. Like, what's this haze covering the sun up? It doesn't feel right. It doesn't have that same warm feeling. And obviously you could see it completely neutralizes that like warm yellow color, just turns into this white grow light. You feel like you're in you know, a grow farm. And so every single day, pretty much, I would just see the same thing happen. And, you know, after a while, it's just like, there's something going on here. And this is super weird. I remember one morning, even just like laying in bed out the window, I can just see the lines going across the sky right above me. And the more that you just start paying attention to it, the common sense finally catches up that this is not normal. This is just another one of the bazillion things that we're really trained to believe is normal. And they throw out these responses that it's condensation, it's a contrail, it's ice crystals, it's, you know, it's whatever. You just need to start looking up. That's kind of the meme, is just look up, you know, just start watching and spend time, you know, sunbathing, just eating your food outside, doing whatever outside, and just watch it over time. Because when that line just turns into this thick haze that covers everything. And, you know, now when I just look in the sky, it's so hard for me to really enjoy a day outside these days, because even on like the pretty nice days, you can still see those plumes of haze around, you know, they're all over the place. It's crazy how deep this is. And when I was in Mexico recently, for example, I was in Puerto Escondido, which is supposed to be this gorgeous, beautiful little Mexican surf town on the West Coast. And it was terrible there. I was there for, I think, 2 weeks roughly. And there are probably like 2 or 3 days that were blue skies. The rest of it was just hazed out. And it's so, and here's another thing, is I could notice people were sunburning more on the haze under the haze. Like, everyone's talking about, oh, like the sun's so bad here, you need to wear your sunscreen all the time. And of course, I don't touch sunscreen. I know how toxic that is. So, you know, I'm just kind of watching these people just cover themselves in sunscreen, and those that don't are just getting cooked. And it brought me back to my interview with Matt Landman. I'm not sure if you remember this part, but he talks about how he has that Sicilian background. He's very sun resistant, but if he's out in the haze, he just cooks and burns, you know. And I haven't tested this a lot on myself, because I already know that, you know, this aluminum, the powdered aluminum that the haze is made of, is reflective, and it's like a magnifying glass. It's going to roast your body. So it doesn't matter if you've cut out all the seed oils and, you know, have the perfect diet and everything. If you're under that, you know, the sun going through the haze, that's terrible for your skin. And this is why you also see all this foliage and trees with these leaves literally roasting off the plant. You know, it's a mixture of that aluminum poisoning and the cooking from the sun. Have you done some research on that side as well?
I have not, but we can definitely talk about SAI, stratospheric aerosol injection, and solar radiation modification. For those people that are still thinking we're like crazy motherfuckers and, yeah, whatever, guys, you know, can we talk about the Bitcoin stuff? Like, and this whole trope, do your own research. I have researched this stuff, and yeah, and then people are going to say, yeah, well, you know, a couple of internet searches isn't going to, you know, bear too much fruit. But we've got this group going on in Twitter, and Lewis, shout out to Lewis Brackpool, a British independent journalist, who's taken these, he's gone deep on this stuff. He did the Freedom of Information request from the UK government for all of their geoengineering related projects that they've been conducting. He got deluged by the government. It took him weeks to go through it all, and he distilled it down into a 30-minute video. Then he got on some huge podcasts to go and talk about this. He's now done the same. I know you saw already, but he's done the same request to the Ministry of Defense and been deluged with information. So he's now busy leafing through all of that. And I remember I was pinging him links, and I'm like, don't forget, make sure you go down this rabbit hole. Make sure you look at this. There's a huge flood in the West Country in the 50s, which was a cloud seeding project run by the RAF, which absolutely destroyed a town, devastated, completely, you know, total destruction. And it's funny, he was on the podcast with Godfrey Bloom.
Yeah. And for people who don't know who that is, he had this legendary central bank rant in parliament or whatever it was a while ago.
In the European, went super viral. European Union. Yeah.
We need him to go do a geoengineering rant next.
Yeah, we do. But the thing about that in that interview was Bloom was like, immediately, I remember that because he was a young boy. I remember that we had to send our toys to this charity that would send the toys to this town because all of the children had lost all of their possessions and belongings in this flood, this crazy flood that come out of nowhere. And nobody ever knew what it was, just, you know, hit the news. And so when Lewis squared the whole circle for him, he's like, no, that was an RAF secret cloud seeding mission. It's here. Here's the docs. Here are the receipts from the UK government. They were running cloud seeding operations. And 2 days later, that little village gets wiped out. Wiped out. That's why you had to send your toys to little boys and girls that had nothing. And by the way, people died. And you could tell from, you know, Godfrey was like, oh, these like the level of evil behind that. And then just to trick the whole country into believing, yo, just bad weather, guys. And keep it secret just for decades.
Climate change and Mother Nature, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's going to be more coming from Lewis because he's now got a stack of stuff which has now been declassified from the Ministry of Defense. It's going to become harder and harder for people to call us crazies on this one. You know,
yeah, RFK, I mean, we keep seeing like new headlines that are finally talking about it too, and they're being, you know, they're trying to be slick with it, but the Bitcoiners are at least at the level of understanding the media bullshit. So they can usually, as long as it's being acknowledged at the higher up, we can point to that and say, look, here, we've seen this with Bitcoin too. They're trying to like be, you know, fancy wording around it, but it's too hard for them to ignore it. So they have to say something. And we saw
Let's bring them back to the language, right? Stratospheric aerosol injection and solar radiation modification. These are like deeply scientific, in air quotes, endeavors. What's the guy's name? David Keith, right? Is he the Harvard guy or ex-Harvard guy?
Yeah.
God, the worst. What is up with this guy?
Anyway, he's a true mad scientist, yeah.
The true mad scientist that gets all of this funding from who? The true psychopath billionaires that are trying to, you know.
Bill Gates.
Yeah, exactly. George Soros as well was another one that when you just start digging into this stuff, follow the money, please, Bitcoiners, just follow the money, stratospheric aerosol injection, do that search, follow the money. Because in your, you did it like a 2.5 hour rip with Matt, and I loved it that you would cut away to parts of the documentary between your conversation, and it shows you. CNN did a whole piece about how stratospheric aerosol injection would work by using tens of thousands of commercial jet. You're like, what? They're actually saying it? And they fly up to 25, 30,000 feet. And then they would spray this like concoction. Of course, they're not going to tell you what's inside of it, which reflects back the sunlight, which would bring down the temperature of the planet, which would rescue us all from global warming. What? Say that again? Like,
it's crazy.
It's unbelievable that I just can't believe people aren't willing to just give it more than 5 minutes thought.
And like you said, you know, they always say like, oh, you know, you're just falling into like a trap from like simple searches when it's such a, so crazy to see people say that, because you immediately know when they say that they themselves are doing exactly that. It's like a projection of they've only done a simple search. We've done way deeper searches than they have. Like I, you know, I'm so glad that Knut, you know, came out and said that we're all crazy, because we both love that guy. You were just talking to him. I've had him on a podcast. This is something we disagree with. He inspired me. I'm putting together a huge list of resources that I put together. And I'm going to like curate this in like a Bitcoiner rabbit hole guide. And I'm going to be making a website about this eventually. I love making these giant curations of content. I made the whybitcoinonly.com, the whycarnivore.com, and I'm going to make one about geoengineering next. I think that, you know, we just need a huge collection of these resources where people can just look into it. And, you know, people talk down on documentaries and movies. Like we talked about Matt Lamb, and he made Frankenskies. The Dimming is another big one. aerosol crimes. There's a bunch of them out there. And, you know, people will say, like, oh, it's just a movie or something. Like, that's not a source.
Yeah, it's been debunked.
Yeah, but if they're a good movie and a good documentary, it's just a collection of all this information and data. Like, it really, I think that's the most powerful way to get through to people a lot of the time, because, you know, we need to have that full walkthrough. And so what I've been doing is I have a few of those documentaries just downloaded on my computer now. And I just upload the entire thing as a reply to people on Twitter now and say, here's a movie. You know, there's nothing that's the most you can possibly do to, like, help get someone out of it. And I have had people respond, you know, hours or a couple of days later and say, oh, shit, I watched that. That's interesting. You know, I'm going to look further into this. You know, that's all it takes.
Yeah, exactly. It's so deep. And that's just one aspect of it. Coal fly ash was another thing that came up, which is a huge, and again, this is like why RFK, I think, is going to be the perfect guy for this, because what I theorize is happening is that waste byproducts are finding their way into the fuel mix somehow. And just like they did with rivers, just like they did with fertilizer, they're doing the same thing with sustainable aviation fuel and coal fly ash. And I was just trying to find it, but I found a report that was put forward. I can't remember the guy's name. I'll have to dig it out for you because you'd love this resource. That was basically tracking, like, the market and the use of coal fly ash and how it could be used as this whole volcano thing. You remember the...
Yeah, the Mount Pinatubo, just like the covering everything with just pollution, basically.
So, right. Why don't you tell people, like, why they believed that volcano was a good thing for, like, the planet, and this is what they're actually trying to replicate. And I think they're using coal fly ash to do that.
Yeah, and that's why I had that as one of the intro videos in my interview with Matt Lamb. And like you mentioned, I tried to pull together as many, like, clips that I could. And there's segments on the news about this, how, you know, and it's framed in such a way like, oh, we're going out to solve this big problem of global warming. And it talks about how Bill Gates is investing in it. And it has these pretty little graphics of the planes flying over and spraying all this stuff. And it says, like, oh, you know, there was this Mount Pinatubo eruption and it actually cooled everyone down. It cooled the whole planet down. So all we need to do is just repeat that by spraying our own pollution everywhere. And we can say, like, we can reduce the temperature of the planet. And none of these places ever talk about any of the resulting effects from spraying shit in the sky. It all comes down to rain on us. And, like, even when, you know, David Keith is actually held to answer that question. Like, I remember part of the Dimming movie is when Dane Wigington is there in the audience at one of these events where, you know, David Keith and Ken Caldera and all these geoengineers are talking. And Dane just asks, like, has it been studied, you know, what happens when we spray aluminum in the sky? Does it have any negative effects by chance, perhaps, maybe? And they say, oh, we don't know. Like, it's possible that it could be really bad, which is why. And then they just go back to the framing of, you know, that's why we don't really want to do this, but it's an option. If things get really bad, we might need it someday. They always go to that. And that's still coming out in the headlines right now. Mm-hmm. And this is what I try to show people is, you know, these headlines, like, almost everyone has seen these headlines talking about how Bill Gates has invested in X project to block the sun. Mm-hmm. And we all just see this and we laugh and we just brush it off like, you know, that's crazy. Like, of course they would never actually do that because it's framed in a theoretical way. But
our models show, right? So it makes it look as though it's, oh, we're just modeling. We're just running models. We're a computer is calculating if we were to dump X amount of aluminium reflective whatever into this is what would happen to the temperature, like, as if they're not doing it.
Yeah, and that's the main lie, is that it's being framed in a way that it's only a theoretical and something that they may do in the future, but they've already been doing it for decades. So, like, if we can just connect people to that lie, and I mean, is it really that hard anymore to convince people that Bill Gates is lying? Come on, guys. Obviously, Everything they do is a lie. I mean, just look at any of the other rabbit holes we've been down around the food system, the health system, the money system. You know, this is a very, it's not that hard to bridge that gap and make the jump. So I'm just, all we can do is keep pounding away at it and just telling people to look in the sky. And something I was going to mention earlier was you're talking about Lewis Brackpool and the work he's doing. We need to get that man on Noster. You know, for me, and I'm curious of your bullishness on Noster, but I have been absolutely obsessed with Noster. You know, every single month I'm more excited about it, to be honest, because for me, as I'm doing my rabbit hole dive too, because I'm still in the middle of this, as you are as well. You know, there's so much to look into, and I'm trying to build that big collection of resources for people, like to turn into a website. And Noster is such a great way to just drop the things as you go and as you're learning and you're finding these resources, because on Twitter or Instagram or anywhere, it's not a good place to do that, because on, you know, I can't, you know, send people links about this stuff on Instagram, you know, on my story or whatever. Like there's no easy way to share it with people. And Instagram is like a normie platform anywhere. It's where we go to try to convince our normie friends to buy Bitcoin. That's as far as we can really go with that. And on Twitter, the algorithm destroys you if you post links to anything. So people are always asking, like, source, where's your source? Where's your source? Well, if you try to post sources to things, the algorithm actually crushes your post because they don't want people going off their platform. So, you know, that's also not a good place to like post sources and links to things. So Noster has no algorithm to stop you, and people also, you know, can pay you. So I'm starting to see the people that always, you know, like and zap my posts about geoengineering stuff. So I'm sort of figuring out who the awake people are. And so it also helps sort of sustain your research because you're getting paid for it, you know, and there's no algorithm cutting you off. So what are your thoughts on where Noster comes into all of this as the communication layer for waking people up?
I'm so bullish on it. It's really, you know, watching it play out over the last year or so and cross posting on it and just seeing it grow so quickly and get better so quickly. There's still a bunch of problems, but I, like a year and a half ago, it wasn't just easy to click open your app store, download a client. You know, you don't even think about this language anymore. You don't have to. A noob can just go to it, download Primal or Amethyst or Damas or whatever, and boom, create an account. And they're not even really, they're not asking what NSEC is or NPUB. It's like, boom, and there's a Bitcoin Lightning wallet integrated with it. Yeah, give it another 2 years. Build it, they will come, right? And as long as we are still talking about it in 2 years' time, and I truly believe we will be, because if I look at everything else I've tried in the past, Tusky, Mastodon, Zion, Keybase, what else was there?
A whole bunch of shitcoin ones that say that they're decentralized. That's the route I took. All these like crypto, blockchain, social media.
Now, what's this Blue Sky stuff? Someone was telling me about this the other day. I didn't even know it existed, thankfully.
Yeah.
Like, how long would it, nobody be talking about that soon?
It's a joke at this point because, you know, it was supposed to be Twitter and Jack Dorsey's sort of decentralized version of Twitter. But as we're seeing on it right now is taking place, that the dynamic that's unfolding is that Twitter, as Elon, you know, has supported Trump, the whole platform is sort of angled toward the right. And all the lefties are going over to Blue Sky. That's becoming the lefty platform. And if you go on there and, you know, support Trump, then you literally get banned. So there's nothing decentralized about this. It's just like a Twitter 2. You know, it's a second Twitter for a different political ideology. And so, you know, it's quite a joke. Like, I don't even know what their pitch is for how this is decentralized, because there are people getting kicked off.
Who's behind it? Who launched it?
It used to be Jack, but he figured out a long time ago that it was not, like, it wasn't going to work. You know, I think it was, you know, at least a couple of years ago, he sort of just said, Noster is going to solve this better than Blue Sky. And so, and I really respect Jack Dorsey a lot, because he was able to realize that his own project was paling in comparison to Noster. And he said that, I think that they're doing it better. This protocol is actually decentralized in a way that, you know, I wanted Twitter to be. It's better than Blue Sky. And he put all of his time and energy into that now. And I have no idea who's running it, if it even has like a leader of some kind. Maybe that's what they say, like, oh, it doesn't have a leader, so it's decentralized, but people can still get kicked off. So I don't even know. I'm not going to waste my time with it.
I don't know how, you know, knowledgeable you are about this kind of stuff, but the one thing that comes up when the pushback, I would say, that you get from people when talking about Nostr is, how's it ever going to make money? How's anyone ever going to get paid for the work that they're putting in? At the moment, developers they're living on funding, right? That's basically what's happening. Or they're just taking a Hail Mary at this thing, putting a bunch of time and effort and energy into it, in the belief that they will find a viable option in the next 6 to 9 months or something, somehow, some way to make money. What conversations have you had with other people about that?
It's funny you mentioned that, because one of the recent conversations, I actually just uploaded this episode yesterday, was with Tanja Bachle, this German girl who's doing a bunch of marketing efforts. She's basically going all around Latin America to these Bitcoin conferences and, you know, helping run the Nostr booths. So she sort of gave me the update on all of that, like how this is going across Latin America. And she pretty much, you know, echoed that sentiment, how the biggest problem is the money. You know, it costs a lot of money to do this stuff. And on the developer side, of course, they need to get paid too. And right now it's somewhat volunteer based. Like, these people are taking time out of their lives to do this, and they're getting paid by zaps, but people sending them Bitcoin on a platform or on a protocol, just like we normally do. But that's not a super sustainable model yet. So this is, I think, one of the things we'll see develop more in the coming years is, like, how, this is the question, is how big will zapping get? Will this eventually become a real, like, big force of monetary value being moved around? And as Bitcoin goes up, it can only help, you know, because this is part of the cycles of new money coming into place. As I'm sure you've read the bullish case for Bitcoin with Vijay Boyapati. You know, he talks about how during the rising period of the price, like, as it's really monetizing quickly, no one wants to spend their sats and give away their Bitcoin. Everyone's holding it as tight as possible because they want all of that price appreciation. But once it skyrockets and then starts to level out in the future, that S-curve finalizes, not only do people have more wealth and more Bitcoin, just, you know, in more value inside that Bitcoin, they're richer, but they also have less that they're giving up by participating in the economy and actually transacting with it. So I think that in time, we're going to see more and more zapping, more and more, you know, friendly transacting of value. And these clients are also implementing really cool ways to incentivize zapping, because Primal, for example, the one that I use quite a bit, they have like a little leaderboard under the posts where whoever zaps the most gets a little top spot. So everyone can see that you're a good member of the community. And you can also put a little custom text in there. So I just put a link to my latest podcast in my zap. And, you know, I feel incentivized to go like zap big amounts to people, so more people can see that I'm, you know, a good member of the community. Everyone likes to, you know, show that like I'm participating. And also you're advertising your whatever link you want, so it's a win-win, right? Okay. For everyone.
So you zap someone like 200 sats or something just to say thanks for your post, thanks for your work, really enjoyed it, here's the zap. But as you zap, you attach a link to your podcast so people can click on that and go check it out if they want.
Yeah, so I mean, this, right, is, like I said, it's Primal. I some other clients may have this. I'm not sure. I haven't explored as many of them as I probably should, but I know that you can just select the custom text for all your zaps. So you don't even have to change anything. You just click the lightning button, it automatically populates with your default amount you have set and the link to all of them. So you can just go through and just spam. Like at the end of the day, usually that's kind of my routine. I go through and I look for, this is sort of a marketing plan. You know, I look for the posts that I think are going to hit the trending tab and like be popular because more people are going to see those. And I just go zap all of them and drop my link on it. You know, it's an interesting dynamic, but this is just, you know, this is a brand new thing. And I think more stuff will come out like this that really incentivize. And another example actually is last night there was this Boostagram ball thing with Adam Curry in Austin, Texas. I'm not sure if you saw that, but basically this huge conglomeration of musicians came together at this Antone's music venue in Austin. And it was a fully, you know, lightning integrated event where they have this big screen there at the venue right to the left of the stage. And it shows a live stream of all the zaps coming in from people watching on the live stream at home. So I pulled it up. I was making thumbnails for my podcast on my computer, listening to this live stream. And when I heard a song I liked, I would pull a tab open and send a zap. And you could see your name pop up on the screen there in Austin. And it goes straight to the artist. And I think that the total amount zapped for this event, which was just a few hours and a handful of musicians, was over 5 million sats, which is a good amount of money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, these things are starting to really pick up steam. And we're in such early days right now, like we always say as us Bitcoiners, you know, this is going to grow. And coming back to our original question of, you know, how will this funding take place? I think that right now it's just a bunch of plebs, like you said. You know, it's mostly, you know, 99% plebs and 0.1% Jack Dorsey's who actually have, you know, money that they throw around every once in a while to specific projects. But as more money comes in, and we're seeing big money come into Bitcoin right now with the institutional side, you know, the corporations are jumping in, the states are jumping in, like they're all flooding in. What happens when these places start coming into Nostr too? Because I think that is just the next step of this self-sovereignty, or at least, you know, just the decentralized future is, you know, they're going to go through the Bitcoin rabbit hole and then they're going to find Nostr eventually too. Because I truly do believe Nostr is going to swallow all social media the same way that Bitcoin is swallowing all of fiat.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And it'll bring everybody to it, right? The marginalized groups on Twitter. So like the blue sky guys are probably going to end up on Nostr, you know.
And I want them to. I don't care how, you know, much I disagree with any of these people. Yeah. See, this is the cool thing about Nostr. I was just thinking about this earlier too. It's a true signal for who's creating value, because people are putting real money on their support, their zaps, you know. So you're going to get a much clearer picture of like where the signal is from certain people. And I know some people like Jack Dorsey's talked about, like, you know, maybe someday they'll even take away the like button. It'll just be a zap button. You know, that is pure signal all the time. You only, you know, you can design your own algorithm, because these clients will, you know, it's a free market where you can, right now it's sort of like a no algorithm place and people love it because it's a breath of fresh air. But they're starting to come out with options for algorithms where you can choose your own. And, you know, you can curate your feed based on, you know, which of these posts got zapped the most. And it's going to be much clearer than these other platforms that just have bots and likes, where there's no like actual skin in the game by the community. But it's going to completely change how we view social media and get value from it.
So all of those guys, given the after the Trump election win, doing the breakdowns, when they were, what was it called, that thing? Like they were just doing their meltdowns, like Trump win meltdown.
Oh, yeah. Just the compilation videos of people just losing their shit. Yeah.
Yeah. If that had gone on Nostr, do you think they would have got zaps?
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
Right.
And it would have happened the other way around too. If Kamala would have won and all the Trumpers were melting down, I think it still would get, because like this is a common theme among the Bitcoiners and the Nostr folks, is we really take sort of a third person approach at looking at this crazy clown world, I think. And to me, that's a sign of, you know, people have just risen above this level of being stuck into politics and the left versus right shenanigans, and just understanding it's all part of this, you know, bigger game, you know?
Yeah. Matt, well, let's talk about your nomadic lifestyle, because I'm sure a lot of people would want to know. How old are you? Like, you're a young guy.
I just turned 30 a couple months ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what was fiat life before you found Bitcoin and before you started traveling with a laptop and a backpack and, you know, going on the road? What was like the career path that you were building for yourself?
Oh, cool. I'll go first. I want to hear yours too later. We'll throw it back each side. But for me, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest of the U.S., so born in Portland, Oregon, spent most of my life in Washington State. That's where I am back now, visiting family. And 100% fiat NPC life, you know, just made all the mistakes that people make and was sort of just raised in that environment where we just trusted the TV, you know. News was on every single night, CNN, MSNBC, it was always on. And had cereal and soy milk before school and ate the trash at the school, took all the vaccines, like all this stuff, man. You know, it's everything. Fully fiat upbringing up until just a few years ago, I would say. 2021 was really the year where I started figuring things out. And funny enough, the thing that really pulled me into just starting to do my own research and build a really strong social network was actually the GameStop shenanigans of 2021, early 2021, because that's when, you know, I saw this thing happening on Wall Street Bets, and I loved Wall Street Bets for years leading up to that. And so I got pulled into that whole thing and was really just locked into Reddit and following Reddit. And when Reddit sort of, you know, got compromised by its centralizing forces, a bunch of, we all went over to Twitter and started creating content on Twitter, continuing to talk about this. And that's where I really, you know, actually locked into social media and using it as a tool for, you know, working together with like-minded people to create positive change. You know, before that, it was definitely just, I was wasting my time on Instagram scrolling and just doing nothing productive. But this is where I realized, okay, like there's actually like huge movements going on around the world where this technology gives us the ability to connect with each other and really work together in a super powerful way and get our voice out there. And of course, now we see Nostr's taking that to a whole new level, but you know, Twitter is better than most, I would say. So yeah, just that was the beginning of my true just awakening process from 2021 to now. Just spending tons of time diving into this stuff, really curating an awesome network. And I would say one of the biggest things I learned about myself is that my icky guy, the thing that I feel like I'm really good at and I have gotten good at through trial and error and practice is finding the smart people and figuring out who the smart people are and just having a fairly well tuned bullshit radar, because I went through the last big spin cycle of screwing up on that would be crypto. You know, I spent a few years in the crypto hole. I can't remember. Did you spend time in crypto too?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I shitcoined. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Shitcoined. I shitcoined my ass off for like 3 years until I finally, you know, went down a sound money rabbit hole and figured it out. But that's where I realized, oh man, there are, you know, people who really put on a smart face, but really are just not trustworthy or just scamming, or, you know, think that they're doing correctly, but they're just completely misguided for some weird way. And not even that goes across all fields too. You know, like we talked about, you know, all these geoengineers earlier. I do think a lot of them have truly believe that they're saving the world by spraying heavy metals
absolutely,
in the sky.
Absolutely, yeah. They do. It's not like there's some evil psycho. Mm-hmm. They actually believe. So even the Bill Gates of this world that is like funding this stuff, he believes it through his upbringing. You know, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. His father worked at Planned Parenthood on the board with Margaret Sanger. Like this really? Is this is all about. Birth control and population control, eugenics, let's call it for what it is. It's about Malthusianism. This is like, there are these people that truly believe and are fully committed to, and it's their cross to bear is to make sure that we do not overpopulate ourselves and put this planet into peril. They actually believe that. People like David Keith believes like this, it's befallen on him and his mega brainiac mind to be able to come up with some kind of substance to spray in the sky. And this is why he gets the funding, right? Or he's just a complete grifter. There's two things. He either is a good person and believes he's trying to make actual change in the world and make the place better for humanity, or he's just in it for the grift and knows where to knows where to hang his hat to get the money for the research. It's mad. And I don't know. Well, we all know the money's broken. That and fix the money, fix the world, because all of these misaligned incentives just go away. That's the long play here. Do you fix people like Gates? I don't know. There's always going to be that 0.01%.
No, we're not fixing Bill Gates. there's no way he's coming around. You know, and this is one of those. I think this is one of the final levels of, you know, becoming a informed critiquer of human beings and these different people involved in the story, because sort of tying it back to what I was saying earlier, like the people in the crypto world, a lot of those CEOs and crypto people, they are completely convinced that they are doing the right thing. And so they don't have to lie, you know, they're telling their truth. And so I think one of the final levels of this is realizing that sometimes confidence doesn't equal true knowledge about a topic, because when you hear someone talk really confidently about something, it doesn't matter how ridiculous or wrong it is. There's something inside of our brain that just hears confidence and thinks, oh yeah, yeah. And it kind of brings you along with them to think that they're correct. And you know, that's why I spent so many years in the crypto world, and why so many people still, you know, listen to Bill Gates and these people who go on TV and talk about this stuff, is because they don't have to lie. Like, they're telling their truth, which is just inverted from reality. And a lot of people just fall in line with it because, you know, they are an authority figure and they have, you know, these fiat credentials that make them seem important. Mm-hmm. So they just go along with it. Yeah. Yeah. And he has unlimited money to spend on these marketing campaigns of, you know, he has entire like Netflix series about how great he is, you know, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. I'm still trying to get my parents on this, man. Like, my parents still think he's a great guy. He's, you know, he cares about the world. He's doing all this good all over the world. And so lots of people here in the Northwest where I'm from, that's like, I'm in his backyard right now. You know, this is our area.
You got the foundation right there.
Yeah. And it's so bizarre to me because you can see the difference between what people think of Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates here, because they're both here. Like, this is like, this is Amazon Central and Microsoft Central. So people think Jeff Bezos is super bad and evil, but they think Bill Gates is great. And so the question is, like, why is there such a big difference? And I think it's literally because he just spent more money on marketing himself as this savior of the world and, you know, saving the planet in all these ways, when, you know, Jeff Bezos just hasn't. He's spent it all on Amazon. I don't know. It's interesting to watch, though.
Yeah, we visited the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation when we were still normies. Wild. Yeah, we were in Seattle. We were home swapping our way around the world, and it was there. So we're like, oh, it's free to walk in. It's a museum, kind of. A museum of all the
things.
Tell
me more about this. What's it like? I haven't been there. Maybe sometime I should go in and, you know, support a podcast from there talking about how evil he is.
So we went in with the kids, and it's all set up, educational. And now you look back, oh God, it was, I think they revolve what they're showcasing. At that point, they were showcasing the difference that they were making with modern day birthing practices in Africa. It's always in Africa with this dude as well. Like, it's his own little petri dish to go and test on people. It's just unbelievable. And then you had this room about vaccines, of course, and how they've already eradicated polio, which is a lie. All you got to do is look into that and the harm that they did with those vaccines. And they were also talking about malaria and how they're going to, you know, create a vaccine for malaria. And just recently you learn about how many, God knows, millions of mosquitoes that they've been releasing, these, what do you call them? Like GMO mosquitoes. Like, what? You guys think this is a good idea, honestly?
And there's videos of this. People have taken videos. I think it was Baltimore where this helicopter just flying over this town and just mosquitoes are just flying out of it. Like, crazy stuff.
It's like, who consented to that? Like, I can't believe that this even gets to happen. It's just unbelievable. And so the birthing practices, was like videos, and they had like all of the equipment there, and you could do you pretend to be a nurse and help someone give birth. Now I look back on it. Yeah, it's crazy. Now I look back on it and I realize, oh shit, it's just another form of indoctrination. Because when you do the podcasts with like Katie the Russian, or even Saifedean and his wife have talked about like modern day birthing practices and how like they're so bad. And how they disconnect, like they're designed to disconnect the baby at the point of birth, the most wondrous moment of that new being's like welcoming to this planet, is to be put on a weighing scales, jabbed a couple of times, wiped, measured
under these horrible LED lights everywhere.
Oh, all under this light, yeah, just. And then wrapped up and given to the mother rather than immediate skin to skin, and, you know, cut the cord immediately. So that is what they're pushing in Africa as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Like, you guys, I don't know. Like, and then you have to go through the question is like, is that pure evil, or do they actually think they are helping people? And it's a gray line, especially with this guy, because everything else he's involved with is the same thing. You know, all of the food, as Texas Slim calls it, the medical, pharmaceutical, agricultural complex. He's in all of it. All of it. From the farming to the pharmaceuticals to the blocking the sun bullshit. You know, malaria. Mate, the next one, circumcision. Huge mass circumcision programs pushed out across Africa. Why? Like adult circumcision, because apparently
it like full adulthood they're doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
What is their pitch for this?
Oh, the usual thing: HIV, AIDS. You know,
wow,
whatever.
That's crazy.
For babies. Oh yeah, get your babies circumcised to stop penis cancer. What? I only got put onto that because I had Ben Howard come on the show talking about circumcision, and that's a whole rabbit hole, man. Wow. And so I just Googled circumcision, Bill Gates, and wouldn't you know it, bang. The first thing is like Bill Gates, X amount of millions, tens of millions fund to, I can't remember the exact country either. You find it, someone, whoever's listening, just Google it, find it. And then go and find who was running. Tell you what, yeah, do it now. Just Google... Bill Gates circumcision fund Africa or something.
Circumcision fund Africa. Let's see what comes up. Yeah, literally the first one is already the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Grant makes male circumcision a top tier HIV prevention strategy, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in Kenya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so does it tell you who is to handle the rollout? You might have to get into the weeds here. I might have to look as well. Because this...
You probably know what you're looking for better than I do here.
Yeah, hang on.
That's a new one for me.
Let me see. Partnership was supported by a $50 million grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. $50 million. To read the full press release, visit Population Services International.
Population Services. Now there's a fucking phrase right there. Population services. That's crazy.
You know, hang on. Let's go back here. Billing mass fund circumcision. This is 2009, blah, blah, blah. More than half the men becoming, and yeah. Blimming, the program is the first massively scale up provision of circumcision by fully trained medical practitioners. Population Services International, global health organization based in Washington, D.C. They're the people. Right, so PSI, PSI.org, who are we? Our team, board of directors, and let me have a look who's on here. I found it once, I can't remember. I got so deep in the weeds once.
This is where Bitcoin takes you, my friends. You start learning about Bitcoin, soon you're searching through circumcision research websites. Just
follow the money, and it all becomes clear. PSI, Population Services International. And like another great one was What We Do, Who We Are, Contact Us. Yeah, no, I can't find it at the moment. If I did find it.
That's such a ubiquitous one here in the States. Like I just looked it up. It's 80% plus. It's probably higher now. This was 2022. It's probably like, you know, getting closer to 100% of people in America are. How big is that across the world? Is this only, you know, America and now popping up in Africa?
The U.S. is way ahead.
Yeah.
Way ahead. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. The number that's been done over there, it's really, really nuts. And if you go back and listen to my interview with Ben Howard,
has check it out. That's super interesting. Yeah. And this is one of these bazillion things that, and this is actually one of the topics I was eventually going to bring up with you, is how, like, there's so many of these things that people are, as they awaken to all of this stuff, things that happened in our past that we have no control over, you know? And things that are even happening right now that we have no control over, like geoengineering. You know, even if we control all the other things we can, you know, myself and so many millions of my American friends out there, you know, we got vaccinated, we got circumcised, all these things happened to us. We didn't have control over it. So it's, you know, it's a real mental process to get through all that stuff and realize, like, we were part of this broken system. And the question is, like, how do we turn these negative thoughts? And the geoengineering brings so many negative thoughts. Like, this is such a dark rabbit hole to go through, because you realize that, you know, you're breathing aluminum no matter what you do, no matter how many things you do control. How do you turn this anger and this negative energy toward these things that were, you know, brought on to you, and turn it into a positive, and turn it into motivation to make the future better? And for me personally, I'm really thankful for Bitcoin teaching me about lowering time preference and thinking more about the future, because that has really been my anchor point here of just seeing past the darkness of the present in my past, you know, because I've just sort of moved on from the fact that, yes, like, things have happened to me and I've done things to myself that were, you know, based on nonsense, and I've done damage to my body and myself for that reason, you know, that I didn't know any better. But the more I think about the future and about, you know, having a family and having children and grandchildren, the less that stuff really bothers me and takes away from my happiness, because I'm looking at that. I'm looking further out. I know that my own kids, I'm going to know all this stuff and do things much better for them. And it really makes me much happier. And I'm sure that you feel that as well as a dad. And so how do you go through that process of turning all of this darkness that we learned about? If you don't have anything to add about our last conversation, feel free to do that first.
Yeah.
But I'm very curious, like, how you know, mentally process all of this and use it as turning into a positive.
It's difficult. And I just found a link. Where's the link I wanted? Where's the chat here?
There we go.
So I've sent you the what we were talking about, circumcision and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the fund and PSI, Population Services International, who were going to handle the rollout. So could you just tell me, have you got this up? This
yep,
person?
I got it. Do you want me to read off that paragraph?
Yeah, just tell me her name and then read off like the first four sentences.
Her name is Dr. Claire Rothschild, which may...
No way. Really? What? Are you kidding? Oh, put away your tinfoil hat, Ben. Please.
Dr. Claire Rothschild is a senior research advisor for sexual reproductive health, strategic evidence, and learning at Population Services International. In this role, Claire leads PSI's global SRHR evidence agenda, providing scientific oversight for research implemented across 35 countries. Prior to joining PSI, she advised the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's family planning strategy and was a National Institute of Health pre-doctoral fellow where her research focused on using digital technology to explore novel measurement approaches in family planning. Listen to all these fancy words. They really know what they're doing. God.
Yeah. Basically just say eugenicist, 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 eugenicist. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yet we are the conspiracy theorists.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, it's so,
Wait, I got to get this last part real quick. She has a PhD in epidemiology from the University of Washington. That's my alma mater, man. I keep seeing my school pop up on this evil shit. And I need to go back there with just a giant sign just to tell everyone, like, you're being indoctrinated. I know that cherry blossoms are beautiful and Suzalo Library is gorgeous, but this place is evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, speaking of Bill Gates' influence, like there's so much of that in that school. That's like that's the biggest school here in pretty much the entire Northwest. I went there. It's in Seattle, University of Washington. Beautiful place to go visit, but
that's the playbook, man. That's the playbook. That's how the General Education Board was set up back in 1902, 1903 by Rockefeller. $1 million. Bang.
Could you give us just an overview of the edge? I know this is a rabbit hole that you have been very deep into. Mm-hmm. I've barely scratched the surface on just like education. Like, could you break down what fiat education is and how this system works?
Yeah. So the General Education Board is the crowning glory of what they were trying to achieve. Yes, the health system was captured, as everybody I think has come to realize. The monetary system, Bitcoin has been down the rabbit hole. They know about 1910 meeting at Jekyll Island. They know 1913 Federal Reserve set up. So they know that the monetary system was captured. Same dudes, by the way, same people involved. And again, the crazy conspiracy theorist in the room would tell you that representatives at Jekyll Island were sent there by certain people, Rockefeller, Rothschild from the European banking institutions and families. They sent across Paul Warburg, who was the mastermind behind the whole thing. JP Morgan, obviously, he had a hand in it with a couple of representatives there, and they hashed it all out and got it through in 1913, Christmas week, when half of Congress were, well, not half, but the naysayers were already gone on their Christmas holidays, right? So bang. You've captured that. With the General Education Board, this was the playbook. 1902, secret meeting, six or seven guys, and a follow-up meeting of how to create and fund the education en masse across America. And it was funded $1 million in 1903 by John D. Rockefeller and chums. And then he puts Frederick T. Gates at the head of the General Education Board, who comes up with this masterstroke that any money given to the General Education Board, given to education, is philanthropy, therefore it cannot be taxed, right? So what do? Well, you use the money, the spare capital that you've got, to fund education. So if you fund the education, you own the education, you get to write the curriculums, you get to write the agendas. And that's what you have at the universities and all of the schools, all the way through, from kindergarten all the way up through K-1 through 12, I think you call it in the U.S. Is that right? Or through?
Yeah, it goes up to 12th grade and then you go to college. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. And so who, and for what? For a certificate. Yeah. You want that certificate. Well, who preordained themselves to be the certificate writer? The General Education Board. It's so obvious when you see it. And that's why you have all of these universities sitting on how many hundreds of millions of dollars in endowments and libraries named after the greatest of all great philanthropists that are just giving up their money because they're just, what do they call it now? Philanthroponomics or something?
Yeah, I forgot that word. It's a good word. Basically, it says it's like it's bullshit.
Yeah.
they use philanthropy as like their cover for really just getting their tentacles in to indoctrinate people, essentially. Yeah. Like Bill Gates is the most classic example ever.
Here's a fun one. I did this with Walker as well. So if anybody's already listened to that, I'm sorry. But if you go to General Education Board Wikipedia page, you could even go to their own website if you want, but I just know where to find it on the wiki. So just put in General Education Board.
All right. Yeah, Wikipedia is the first one. It has a giant picture of John D. Rockefeller right there in the search.
Scroll down to where it says philosophy. I'll pull up a screen share.
I can do it pretty easily. Let's break tab window. All right. Yeah, I'll just pull it up here for anyone watching on video. For people listening, mm-hmm. we'll just say what we're showing. All right. See it.
Yeah, so just go down. So there it's just going to tell you about the formation that I've already told you, 1902, the meeting, the funding by John D. Rockefeller. Go hit philosophy on the left side of your screen. It says philosophy. Go down there. Right, can you just read under philosophy? It starts with In Our Dream. And this is from it. You can even hit the link at the bottom if you really want the source. General Education Board, Occasional Papers, number one, The Country School of Tomorrow. And I think it was written in
1913 right there. Is that it?
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so mm-hmm. this was written in 1913. So they'd already been going around 10 years. But they wanted to get the philosophy down and, you know, what had they been up to for the last decade? Go for it. Tell me the philosophy. This is from their own hands.
All right. In Our Dream, we have limitless resources and the people yield themselves with perfect docility to our molding hand. Nice. The present educational conventions fade from their minds, and unhampered by tradition, we work our own goodwill upon a grateful and responsive rural folk. We shall not try to make these people or any of their children into philosophers or men of learning or men of science. We have not to raise up from amongst them authors, editors, poets, or men of letters. We shall not search for embryo great artists, painters, musicians, nor lawyers, doctors, preachers, politicians, statesmen, of whom we have an ample supply. The task we set before ourselves is very simple, as well as a very beautiful one, to train these people as we find them to a perfectly ideal life just where they are, so they will organize our children into a little community and teach them to do it in a perfect way, the things their fathers and mothers are doing in an imperfect way, in the homes, in the shops, and on the farm. Wow.
If that isn't societal control or, again, just put on behavioral control, PSYOP, whatever you want to use, whatever words you want to use, it's there, it's written. They're not hiding it. That yeah, you're pulling up the actual resource now from the internet archives.
There it is. And this is straight. Oh, look, here the date says, 1853, that's when the author was born. But yeah, publication date, 1916.
Who was the author?
Frederick Taylor Gates.
Yeah.
Is that yeah. a Gates
no,
connection?
No, he's not.
Okay.
Not that I found anyway. As soon as I saw it, I'm like, what? No way. Like, I'm sure Mrs. Rothschild, that's, you know, handling the circumcision rollout, is probably nothing to do with, you know, whatever. It never ends.
Crazy.
So, back to your question, how do I, you know, handle all of this, I suppose, information overload and darkness when, like, Lauren's sitting next to me, we're talking about the geoengineering. Now, a lot of people would think you would probably point fingers at me for involving the kids, like, in, you know, just having them exposed to this crazy thought, you know. But I think you got to expose them to as much as you possibly can. Obviously, you don't want to go completely freaking lunatic and over the top. Which I don't, not even personally, because you reach a point where you're like, I'm sure you felt this. I can't go any deeper than this, because this is the point where I stop. Because if I keep going, I have a gut feel I'm going to keep finding darker and darker stuff. And I don't want to go there for my own mental health. And so I think having Yeah, it's tough to put into words, I suppose. So, like you said, if you speak about something with confidence, you've got to be very wary of those people. They're the people you've got to be wary of. I'm trying to put into words right now how I feel about it and finding it difficult. So it's, I don't want, for example, on the geoengineering thing, I do not want for my kids to grow up thinking that is a natural sky. Like, I cannot believe I'm at the point in my life where I'm 48 years of age and I am arguing that the sky is blue.
Yeah, right.
That's what we're doing. So I don't want that. You know, I never had this as a kid. When I was 13 or 14, I was out on my bike all day playing football. Sure, I was in the UK, so it probably wasn't beautiful blue skies all the time, but I remember blue skies a lot more than what we're seeing now. And I certainly don't remember that haze. I certainly don't remember these grid patterns. This is not good. This is not right. And I hope we get back to normal somehow. I mean, we have to. You can't hide the truth, right? Three things you can't hide: the sun, the moon, the truth. Well, they're trying the other two, right? And they have been hiding the truth for a while, but it will all come out, all of it. That's my thoughts. And sorry, I can't really get my point across.
No, it's so hard to, you know, that's why I asked it, because it's such a hard question. It pushes us to the limit of really articulating, like, how do we handle this? Because this is the information overload you mentioned. Like, this is it. You know, you can't get more overloaded as when you just have an infinite satiation for these rabbit holes. You know, you're going to get there eventually. And I would say there's a few things that come to mind. The first one is how you mentioned, you know, you have to sometimes stop yourself for your own mental health. Like, in my situation, I feel like I have a greater tolerance to this stuff than normal. So someone's got to do it. I'm going head first. You know, there's a lot of people out there that have more difficult lives, more difficult situations. They're stressed out by finances and their diet sucks, so their brain doesn't work very well and they're mentally not as good. I've figured out a lot of these things myself in recent years, and this is, you know, why I talked about the carnivore diet rabbit hole. For me, that was a big one, of realizing that my whole life I was just in this state of perpetual mild brain fog and didn't even know it. And so now that I've, you know, come out of that,
Did you do well in your studies, like university and all that kind of stuff?
I did. I did pretty well. Well, in high school, I did great because it was like a really small little farm town. It wasn't, you know, a super high bar. I did great. And then in college, I got knocked down a few pegs because University of Washington is full of super smart people. Like, people come there from all over the world, you know, to study there because it's a great, you know, very high up the fiat university totem pole. Mm-hmm. A lot of smart people there. So I was, you know, I would say average or below average there, but, you know, I got in, I got through it, you know.
Yeah, with brain fog, right? That's the crazy thing.
And you know, all sorts of other stuff. Just I can remember thinking back, like, just how stressed I was all the time. And, you know, my sleep wasn't that good. But the health rabbit hole also sort of gives you this hope for how much resilience humanity has, you know, how the human being is such an amazing organism. Like, we can really push through a lot and we can adapt to things, you know. Like, in that environment, I adapted to eating my shitty cold cereal and Hot Pockets and cup of noodles every night, you know, and beer every single day when I was living in a fraternity for 3 years, you know. Your body adapts to it and you can just get used to it, and you're obviously in a suboptimal state. But if you have, you know, a lot of motivation to do something, we're able to tank through that stuff. And that's kind of where I was at. But, you know, as I've learned more and more and done more experimenting into the side of things, I've found a whole new level unlocked. And that's sort of where this comes in, is like us folks who dig out of that, we need to use this new, and also the Bitcoiners, you know, Bitcoiners are digging out of their financial hole by upgrading the form of money they're holding, which gives them more freedom, you know. As there's all sorts of different rabbit holes that are going to upgrade your self-sovereignty in some way. And I think it's super important that these people who are gaining this breathing room and this enlightenment, it's really our obligation to use that to help others and to, to get more people. And that's, you know, I'm sure why you have a podcast, why I have a podcast, because I have all this like knowledge and energy now that I want to share. Like I've found all these smart people through digging all these rabbit holes, and I want to spread their message to more people through an easily digestible medium. And even when the rabbit hole gets super dark, like the geoengineering stuff, I mean, I vividly remember, this was just a few months ago. I think this was like August when I was just, you know, 100% focused on just learning more about geoengineering, just watching all these videos and reading through all the patents. And, you know, that's when I did the podcast with Matt Landman. It was last time I was here in my hometown during the summer. And this, every single night when I'm doing like heavy working on my computer, I always end the evening before I go to bed. I do a mile walk around this loop in my neighborhood just to kind of get some fresh air and get the screen away from me and clear my mind. And I just remember I go out there, I'm walking in the rain, and I'm just thinking, there's probably fucking aluminum in this rain right now. It's toxic rain. Like this shit is, you know, it's not, even nature has been stolen from us. You know, even what I used to just love being out in the woods, and like, there's so much forest near where I live. And I go ride my bike in it. I love mountain biking, so I'll take my bike out, and I can see the trees damaged by this stuff. There's more and more trees just dying and falling over everywhere. There's less and less wildlife now than ever before. And this is one of the pieces that's really connected for me. Is I felt that like over the last several years, like it seems like there's less birds singing, there's less butterflies on our garden in the backyard. These things are concerning. And of course, I always thought, oh, it's climate change. It's because I drive a car, because that's what they tell us. They don't tell us because they're spraying aluminum and it's filling up and poisoning everything. So as those pieces come together, you go through some real dark days and dark nights. Like for me, that night, just going on this walk after researching geoengineering all day and just realizing I can't even have like fresh air anymore because these fuckers are out here poisoning it. It's really tough. And this is why coming together with like-minded people is so important. I remember the next day I came into our little Twitter group chat and just saying like, I'm so thankful I have you guys, because I would be losing my mind if I didn't have some people to just riff with and, you know, connect with and bounce our frustration off of each other sometimes, you know, because this is tough. It's really hard to go through this. Just realizing how much evil there is out there and how sometimes we have little control over it. But there's always some way you can help make a difference. And I think that you and I agree that this, we've found a good niche where we can try to help bring people up to speed and grow this movement and just get more, at least attention around it. Because I think that's the first step, is like the more eyeballs we can bring to this topic. And we're seeing
Interestingly, as much pushback and side-eyeing I've had about it, when I'm out in the conferences or the meetups, I have more people pull me aside and say thank you than I have had others, you know, call me out as crazy, which is interesting. Yeah, for sure. That you know, that gives you some solace. But at the same token, I don't think they're ready to talk about it openly with their friends and family yet, and certainly not go on Twitter about it or anything like that. So slowly but surely, you know, it's.
And this is another thing that's important, is that people, we need more people to just no longer give a fuck about, you know, what they appear to look like and if they look crazy, and just go out there and just start talking. And obviously not everyone's going to do that, because, you know, we're social beings. We're so hardwired to want approval from our peers, you know, our friends and family. And I've personally gotten to the point where I just don't care about that anymore. And I, like, it's really opened up a big part of my brain that, you know, is always thinking about this stuff and always worrying about, like, what are people going to think of me, you know? And I think that the more people get to that level and get to that point, people will realize that that is a great mental health hack. stop giving a fuck. It's so stressful to always worry about what you look like and what people care about what you're saying. It's been amazing. And you know, of course, you know, we were talking how so many Bitcoiners come after you and I, especially just for talking about this stuff, and Ifrat and all the other friends in the group chat. But the thing that everyone in that group chat has in common is like, it just brushes off of us now, you know, because we're so used to this. Because originally that was Bitcoin, you know, we were the crazy Bitcoiners. Everyone thought we were getting scammed and we were falling for, you know, whatever the Fed or the CIA made this thing or whatever they said. And now, you know, we're being proven correct as the price goes up and more people are learning about it, buying in, doing the research, reading the Bitcoin standard. And so it's kind of this interesting market of trust that's out there right now. It's shifting because all of the Bitcoiners that were once called crazy are being proven right. Their friends are coming back and realizing, okay, like I'll actually listen to this person now. But even those Bitcoiners still have other rabbit holes that they have not, you know, figured out yet. And they're still sometimes falling in the same traps. Like we talked about how, you know, they're thinking like, oh, of course, chemtrails, those people are crazy because, you know, they don't really know why. They've just been indoctrinated. They haven't gone back to the first square over again and started from the first principles thinking, you know. And so sometimes people have to do that a couple of times, and people who are locked into just one, you know, I always recommend to go explore more. And this is why I'm having so much fun just being all over the place on my podcast, just throwing things at people from all sorts of different angles. And you do that too. I love how you do that on your podcast, how you've really just expanded it. And, you know, your geoengineering episode with Mitch, the orgone donor, was one of the first ones I listened to kind of be like, oh man, you know, I need to look into this. This is fascinating. So keep on doing that, man. The real ones will support you the whole way. Even if they disagree with you at first, like the fact that you're getting out there and you know, just being controversial, this will pay off as an investment in the long run for sure.
Yeah, I find it fun. It's just following these little trails that you find yourself. And if it weren't for Bitcoin, we wouldn't be here doing this stuff. So thank you, Satoshi, whoever you are, wherever you are. But I've just seen the time, brother. We've been going for like an hour and 45 minutes, and I think I've probably got dinner coming up soon. So we should probably look at wrapping it up. Was there any other particular subject you wanted to hit on?
I mean, we have so much in common, my man. Like, there's infinite subjects to dive into. I say we just bookmark this and do another one in the future, you know?
Let's do that. Let's do one in 2025 when we have... Well, yeah, there's going to be a lot of news coming out your side, I think, once you've got the inauguration under your belts.
True.
What goes on with Bitcoin? What goes on with RFK? What difference he can make? Like actual difference, actual impact he can make with your health system over there and with the geoengineering, because he's categorically said, we will end this crime. And, you know, we've got a guy that's... This was his bread and butter, right?
Yeah.
Litigating against companies that were polluting townships, water tables. And this is, interesting times ahead. So thank you for having me on, and thank you for coming on. I know we're going to post this on both of our channels. And thank you for everything that you've done and for being one of the first to really back what I was putting out there, especially with this, you know, it was a lonely place to be for a while, but you came in and stood right by my side, and you've blown me out the water actually with your own research and your own podcasts on this and the deep dive. So it's great to have you in the space, and thanks for all you do.
The feeling is so mutual, man. I really look forward to our future discussion. Like you said, I think we're going to have a lot to talk about next time. I look forward to it.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.